This is Bootstrapped Web 2018. We're back at it after a little good break there. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
What's up, man? Good to be back. Hope you had a nice break. We can get into what we did over the break. And January's like a slingshot, baby. You know, you take time off with the fam, you hang out, you read everyone's like weird moral dilemmas on Twitter about like, you should work hard. You know, did you catch
that? I did catch that. I caught that little controversy there a little bit.
Flame war. So like one poor soul like wrote a comment of like, these, you know, 10 days represent 3% of the year. And while your competition is slacking off eating with their family, like you should get to work and take advantage. And then of course, like DHH responds and like the whole universe explodes. And then there's the backlash to the backlash.
There's like the two sides of like, you know, you have to kind of hustle and work overtime and work over holidays. And this is how you win. And this is the only way to win. That's one argument. The counter argument, which kind of started the whole flame or the reaction to the whole flame war maybe is just that like, you know, that's wrong. Like you have to like have your lifestyle in check and, you know, hang with the family, take time off, stay healthy, get rest. I was listening to Stelly and Heaton this morning on their podcast, and I completely agree with their take on this whole controversy.
And, you know, and what's that?
What Heaton said, you do you. There's no right and wrong way about any of this stuff that anyone's talking about ever on podcasts. Like, I totally agree with that. I hate people shaming other people for working hard and for not working and taking a break. It's like, you do whatever the hell you want to do, you know, whatever you need.
The thing I'm against is people telling people what to do. That's what rubs me the wrong way. You know, it's like, if you frame it as, here's what I did and here's why, and maybe you can learn something from it. That's one thing. But this is the right way to do it. I'm telling you, this is what you should do. Doesn't feel right.
Right. Like you're wrong for the way you live your life. Like,
yes. No. Yeah. Like, come on. There's a counter example to absolutely every single point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And I caught it. What's her name? I'm blanking on her name. The founder and CEO of WildBits, right?
They have hers was the one that I caught. Yeah.
Yes. And she was like, let's like be honest for a second. A lot of us in a better position, let's call it, in the career phase, started off working like crazy. So I hear you on the backlash to like, you got to go take a break. But if you were going to be honest, that first like 6 months, years, sometimes 2 years, sometimes more, you were cranking like a maniac too. So like you didn't follow that advice. So yeah, it was an interesting thing, especially to watch in the holidays as like your family's around you and you're on Twitter and you're kind of thinking like, should I be stressed right now? Or should I feel good right now? And I know I had a very dark first few days.
You mean first few days of January or?
No, the first few days of break of like, you know, my family here, we got a house, like we got like a bigger house in Portland as an Airbnb and a bunch of family flew in. So we could all fit together in the same house. So it was really supposed to be like a unplug, hang out with the fam, hang out with the kids. And the first 2-3 days I was in a depression and I was dark. I felt like I just didn't feel good at all. I felt guilty about everything. And I felt
guilty because you weren't working during those days.
It just opened the spigot. It like cascaded into not just like, oh, I should be doing more work now, but like, oh, I should have gotten that investor update out before this. Now I'm not going to get out till January. And it just spiraled into like negativity land. And I had to like have the debate with myself. And it took a few days to like get both sides evened out. And then I was able to relax, and then I really enjoyed myself and got some rest and relaxation and was starting to get more creative. And now I feel okay, but it was a weird like 10 days there.
Yeah. We took a long vacation up to Vermont. So like the coldest cold front in America is hitting the Northeast, and we decide to drive 4 hours into the deeper cold area of the United States for some reason. It was actually like a gift from my wife for the holidays to take this, what was supposed to be a snowboarding trip. And I thought I was going to take my daughter, you know, have her take ski lessons for the first time and all that. Yeah, my snowboard never left the car. It was negative 25. That's not a joke. It was negative 25. Like, it's insane. We had this little Airbnb in Stowe, Vermont, and we didn't leave the place. We just hung out on the couch, watched Netflix for 3 days, and it was pretty relaxing. It was fun. Stowe is a really cool little place, but we can only like step out of the Airbnb for like a few minutes at a time without freaking out. I definitely got some just flat out relaxation time, which was a nice change of pace, you know, just watching some Netflix documentaries and stuff like that and watching TV and hanging out. And there's plenty of time where I just broke out the laptop and started working on stuff, like trying to get ahead on, well, try to catch up on what I wanted to finish in December, which didn't quite get finished. You know, there's always that stress of like, I wanted to ship this thing before I took this break, but it's dragging into the first week of January. And so, and now, you know, the stress is still with me right now because I'm looking ahead to about 2 weeks from now. I've got a string of three back-to-back trips. I've got two big Snow Tiny comps. And then we're taking a trip down to we're going to take a long weekend down in Belize, my wife and I, which I'm really excited about. That's only going to be like a 4-day trip, but that should definitely be a disconnect, hang out on the beach for a few days. And Big Snow is always disconnect as well because I'm hanging out and networking with people the whole time. So there's really no time that you could work even if I wanted to.
Yeah, the value's in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing that I'm working on right now is the big productized course relaunch. And I wanted to get this course lesson, all the lessons done in December, definitely dragging into this first week of January. But today I'm hoping to put the finishing touches on that beast of a project.
I think where that whole debate, the one we addressed on Twitter and also the one raging internally, where it becomes useful in January is it does force you to look at what you're doing. Look, we're not the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Like, yes, we're busy, but there's always an element to, if you're that busy and that crazy, you're not prioritizing well and you're not focusing on the right things and you're not kind of, you haven't set yourself up for success on that whole stress and what to focus on game. You know, it's not like you have to be, you know, David Heinemeier Hansen, who works 25 hours a week and drives like crazy cars for fun. You know, you don't have to be a freak in that sense, but it is useful to look at what you're doing and say, I shouldn't be overwhelmed. If I'm overwhelmed, that's my fault. It's not like that badge of honor of I'm so busy at work really is not healthy. It's not smart.
I do think that a lot of the pressure that all of us feel is internal. We put it on ourselves. I know that's definitely the case for me. Nobody else is adding this stress other than myself. Like in terms of like, I want these things to ship. I want these realities in my business to come true and I want them to be true yesterday. But the reality is they're not possible until 1 year from now because it takes that long to do whatever we want to do. You know, like things can never happen fast enough. You know, whatever plans I make, whatever plans I made last year in 2017, there weren't enough days, enough hours to get them all done. And it's like, that's the lesson that I keep learning year after year after year. It's like, I haven't fully internalized like how long stuff takes. Like I can't predict how long it'll take to ship a project. You know, I think I've gotten better, more productive and I can definitely execute faster. And I am able to tune out distractions better than I used to be able to do. But still, it's like, even when I outline and get specific about like, here's the game plan, and these are all the strategic decisions, make those up front, and then just focus on execution, there's still stuff that just takes longer than expected. That really stresses me out because then it's like, I want to start this new marketing funnel, which I know which I want to make a big impact in my business, but I can't do that until these other assets are put in place and it's taking me extra hours to do that. And then trips come up and it's tough.
You know, we've been working with this marketing coach on our marketing process and so on. One of the most helpful things that he does is he prods on what is the smaller bite to take from that experiment. And how can we get data on whether or not that experiment's going to work by doing less and less and less? Remember what we talked about, like site redesign, and then we narrowed that down to actually let's just redirect all the traffic from the homepage directly to the checkout page, and let's see what happens. So we've been trying to do that more and more because you don't know which experiments are going to work, and so if it takes you 2 months for an experiment, you just killed off an opportunity to find out what works, which is like, feels very dangerous. I mean, I know I've spoken about in the past where I always feel like there's an optimal path and then you're rarely on it. So I always think about whatever we have right now, whatever the product, the tech, the limitations, everything that we have right now, if applied in a different way, different market, different context, could 10x the business. So I always have to like trying to search for that. And so I've started looking at that and looking around at my team. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, whoa, they're not doing that individually either. And that's scary. Because it was an amazing thing to hire employees. And now that we have 14, it's like, whoa, all this work's going on without me. Isn't that amazing? But then it kind of dawned on me, like, oh, the success team might not be on that optimal path. And now all of a sudden, that's my job, to help them identify what the optimal path is. It's not enough to just do work. If you do the wrong work for a month, it just doesn't have nearly as big of an impact if you spent 3 days on the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, especially when it comes to product development, that's something that I look back on the year of 2017 and like a significant chunk, maybe 20 to 30% of the features that I paid for the developers to work on and that I waited weeks for them to finish are either so insignificant that they shouldn't have even built in the, like in terms of usage and focus, or I ended up scrapping them entirely and replacing them with something simpler.
That stuff will kill you. That can break you.
But like at the time, I for whatever reason, I thought it was important, and then a simpler version emerged. You know.
Yep. And we've done that repeatedly. I think it's normal, but if you can minimize it, I'm not into the concept of like researching everything out ahead of time and knowing exactly why you're doing it and how many people are going to use the feature. I don't think that's realistic in our situations.
Right.
But
there I agree.
Right. It's like, I took an academic approach, which I appreciate. And I can even acknowledge that it's the right approach. It just doesn't mean that it's the right approach for our situation every single time.
There are all these like, quote unquote, rules or like common best practices that we hear preached everywhere, but there has to be some pushback on all this stuff. Just like what we were talking about originally about the, you know, you have to hustle or you have to take time off and stay healthy. Like when it comes to like validation and like validating a product and being and validating every single feature in the product and being completely data driven about it, there has to be an element of just trust your gut. Everybody has intuition. You should know your customer well enough and you should just have that good of a feel for where they're at by talking to them, by investing time in their world to know what's important and what's not. And you're not going to be right 100% of the time, but a lot of times that's what it takes to move fast is not to stress over, okay, do we have evidence to justify every single decision? You know?
And that's one of the things that I don't like about the hero worship of a lot of the you know, very successful entrepreneurs and product people that we look up to, because a lot of the stuff that they write about how to do things is in hindsight. They're talking about their highlights in hindsight, what they did that worked. Like I guarantee you almost none of them approach it in the way that they write about after the fact. And then if you look at that and you feel bad for not following that, that's unhealthy.
And you know, you look at these highlights, you look at somebody who's telling their story on Mixergy or their blog post or their podcast or whatever, and they're speaking at a conference, you're getting the end result. You're getting the story of the end result. Like everybody wants to achieve that. Everybody wants to experience what that person has experienced, right? We want that reality for our own business. And that's part of what I think adds the pressure of like, I want that stuff now. And hearing that story makes us feel like, oh, it's so easy, or that it was achieved so quickly. It's not. Like you're seeing the finish line. You're not seeing the years that it took that person to get there. Just the timeline of building anything is so much longer than it seems. It's way messier. And it just, to me, that's like the core of the frustration. It's like, I want to get there sooner and it's not moving fast enough, but there are no shortcuts too. There's no matter how well you execute, no matter how productive you are every single day, there are things that just take that naturally need time to fall into place.
Yeah. Ben and I talk about it. We talk about the intimacy when you work that closely with someone, you get to see all the good and bad. And most people, you don't show the bad. I mean, it's a bit meta, but everyone listening to this podcast knows we're trying to be as honest as possible, but you're not getting all the bad stuff that's normal. Even we're doing it in highlighting these things in hindsight. We're trying to be forthcoming, but it's not everything up to the minute. If everyone saw, this was the difficult part about a family business. Working with my brothers and my dad, there's no idolatry. All the pretense is removed about how amazing and perfect of a person your dad is when you work with them every single day. And the same with your kids and your brothers. So it's like, that's the trade-off. You get the time together, but you're seeing the human flaws.
Well, all right. So what are you working on next? what's coming down the pike in your world?
I think the theme that I'm like, you know, coming across lately is that all of this is just really hard, man. First of all, I keep looking over at crypto land and I'm like, why am I not day trading? Right? I bought my first cryptocurrency investment, if you want. It's like gambling. It's an adult casino.
It is.
I bought $1,000 worth of some things.
So did I.
It's worth $2,000 2 weeks later.
I know.
I don't even know what they do. Like, this is walking into a casino and being like, all right, let's see what happens. Yeah,
sure. You know.
Yeah. Ripple. Have you seen Ripple? The founder of Ripple is worth as much as Mark Zuckerberg is worth.
Yeah.
This is not gonna work out well.
No. Insane.
So anyway,
I was listening to Tropical NBA today. The guy who has he somehow accepts Bitcoin for all of his, people buy his e-commerce products with Bitcoin, and he has over 2/3 of his self worth in cryptocurrencies, and it's that is just insane. You know, look,
I love it. You have to love it in some way, but you do need to fear it and not pretend like it's just going to continue to go up.
No, it's forever. I have it just for the game of it. I like to check, you know, to see the value every day. It's play. It's play money. I'm checking it 3 times a day just to see. But you know, I'm not taking it. I'm definitely not trying to take it as a serious.
I'm down to only 82% up.
Yeah,
it was down 30% the day after I bought it.
I know. I bought it and it was up 100%. It was up 99%, and that was the point where I was going to take out what I invested and then just
and leave it.
But it didn't cross the 100, and then it went down to 60%, and then it's been hovering ever since.
I'm hodling, baby. I told myself a year or 100x, not some before that. But, and then I told myself I wasn't going to check every day. Well, I check a few times a day. So anyway, outside of that, which I do think we're going to talk more about over the next 6 months, I saw a straight SaaS company do an ICO and raise $2 million that way. And that stuff, I can't help but be excited by that side of things. The intersection of bootstrapping, VC, angel money, and then the whole ICO thing, it has real potential for the bootstrapping community to be.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so
first, I'm trying to remember where in terms of your product, where did we leave off near the end of last year?
So nice little Jewish boy from New York, from Israel, got a very nice Christmas present. On Christmas, we crossed $100 million process revenue for 2017. So that was awesome. That was just a boost for the whole team and energy, morale, and just it was great.
The product at this point, you guys aren't building any big new features, or you are?
We have worked out a lot of the tech process issues that we rubbed up against in the past few months. So we got a CTO coach. I just got off the phone with him before this podcast, actually. We meet once a week. He's been incredibly helpful in helping us establish the right process now that we've put the ownership and responsibility for technology onto the lead engineer and let Ben focus more on the product. So that shift was great for everybody. It relieved a lot of pressure on Ben that he wasn't really able to have as much of an effect on. and they put the ownership and the onus right on the person that has the biggest effect on it. So that was really helpful. We didn't release a big feature for a long time. And then all of a sudden, at the end of December, we released one big one. Next week, another big one goes out. And then 2 weeks later, our biggest update of the past, I guess, 6 months or so goes out. Yeah, so right now we're really focused on getting that right and getting churn better, because we have been adding what should be a very, very satisfying amount of MRR. But because the churn's too high, it's not making as much progress on the actual revenue. So that's really the focus. So we've got everyone aimed in that direction. Part of that depression of the first few days was a feeling of futility, a feeling of the most important thing in the company right now is the tech and the process, and I can't have an effect on it. And so I'm sad because I feel helpless. And really where I shook out in that internal debate is, okay, let's just put that aside and say, acknowledging I don't have control over that, what do I have control over? And let's focus on that. So we've been focusing a lot on success. I basically told the success team, you guys are the boss. Whatever you need, the company will do. If you need marketing to change things up in the way they position things so you get better people signing up or different people signing up, we'll do it. If you need tech to add a giant button that says click here to learn how this feature works, whatever you need that you think will make people more successful, because once people start using our product, they stay. So it's getting them to start using it. Everyone, it's actually been a very interesting thing because I didn't know much about the success process. We have great onboarding. A very, very high percentage of people get onboarded and have their account set up. Where we fall down is in the account activation. And so now all of our energy is focused on, okay, they create an account, they got set up, they connected their store, they connected payment processor, everything. But from that point to actually processing revenue, that's where we're weakest.
Is it because their store is not very active?
Well, the truth is the first thing to find out is why. That's right. That's the first thing is, do you not understand how the product works? Do you not trust the product? Are you confused by something? Are you looking for certain features that you can't find or are limitations that make you not want to continue on? You know, whatever those things are, we have to figure out what they are and address them.
No, but I mean, like, what if they're not selling enough product? Then I guess maybe the problem is like it's the wrong people are coming through the funnel.
Right. And there's definitely part of the problem is that. Right. So what we've done is we started using a product called Sales Machine. It's a software company out of France, I think. And what they do, it's a customer success software that allows you to identify triggers and parameters. So if someone has been processing at a certain level, but that dipped more than 10% over the past week, send an alert and mark a task for someone to reach out to them. Right. So all this stuff, and one of the biggest things is to identify who the best customers are. So we came out with a mantra. Here's our mantra. And this is like an accidental finding because I was ranting like a lunatic. Okay. I wrote, stronger relationships with fewer customers who are more successful and stay longer. So that's our mantra, right? So now when we look at that and we talk about, should we do this marketing campaign? And then we say to ourselves, that's not aimed at bigger customers. Why do we care to do more? We don't want more. We want fewer customers who are more successful and stay longer. So it's helped orient a bunch of different things and it gets thrown back in my face. And I say, oh, that sounds great. They have this huge list and whatever. And someone comes back and says, but does that do what we're trying to do?
Does that achieve the mission? Yeah. I mean, you know, speaking of the tech process stuff, that's something that's definitely on the horizon, probably looking to next month. So the past year, in my case with Ops Calendar, the SaaS, we're at a different stage than you guys. You guys are further along. You guys are doing things the right way. I've been doing things do it as fast as possible way, you know, just get version one of the product built. And I think the product is actually really strong, like from the feature standpoint, but we've definitely to go faster. We cannot fully use test driven development the way that we should, you know, and any developer listening to this, you know, that's obviously the best practice. And if you ever build a SaaS, you would always use test-driven development, but when you're constrained by time and cash flow and runway, you want to get these features built as fast as possible. And you know, that's just not the the priority is shipping the features, because you don't have hundreds or thousands of users. You only have a few users who need these, and you're validating whether this is actually going to be a viable business. So that's been the theme of the past year. But now we do have some paying customers, and we are getting organic trials coming to the site. People are interested in the product, and the product has come along. So it's pretty complex, and all these different features interact with each other, and they worked fine for months, and now they're breaking down. And so I'd say at least half of the time, I have to task my developers, where I have limited resources. I have to take them off of building new features just to go fix bugs and refix bugs, like refix the same features that were previously working. And that's clearly just because we don't have tests built into the code that would prevent those bugs from even cropping up. And so, you know, probably January, February, I'm going to need to just task my lead developer to just pause all work on new features and go back and retroactively build a bunch of tests for existing features and we'll start, you know, doing like test-driven development for all new features going forward. It's going to be a big kind of setback in terms of making progress on new features, and new features will be slower to come out because we're building tests for everything. But the idea is that we shouldn't have to go back and refix bugs multiple times like we are now. It's been kind of frustrating because there definitely still are some features that are in the queue that need to be built, that customers are literally asking for, stuff that I want to be using every day myself. But we've got to get some of the, you know, it's not like we're doing like a rebuild of the app or anything, but we do need to get these tests built in, you know.
Yeah, it can be frustrating because you know exactly what people want, and it still, you can't just do it. It still takes time, and it's far off. So where are you now? It's first week of January. What's the balance between audience ops, ops calendar, productize? Like, how are you prioritizing?
This month, January, is definitely all productize. Audience ops is like chugging along, doing actually really well. It had a really good December. Sales pipeline looks pretty good in January too. The team is really solid. The one thing that I just did in audience ops is I just set in motion hiring an additional Filipino VA, just adding to that group. The current guys are getting a little, you know, too much on their plate. But other than that, no changes there. Ops calendar, I just talked about, like it's kind of in pause mode because my developers took some time off over the holidays. They're just getting back into the swing of things now. So that'll be ramping back up in the next couple of weeks. But my focus for all of December and now stretching into January is productize and my personal site. I'm just finishing up the creation of the 100% new productized course. I'm going to be releasing that to existing customers who get grandfathered into it probably in the next week or so. But now that I've basically done creating all the course material, all the lessons, all the videos, now I have to do all the little tying up loose ends. And that's going to take like a good 2 weeks. I've got to set up a new course membership site, the purchase, the membership, the access to the course material.
What's your default on that tool? It's such an interesting space.
Well, up until now, what I've been using is Pippin's Restrict Content Pro.
Love you, Pippin. Shout out to Pippin.
Yeah, he's the man. And that's been a really great product. Although I think I'm going to go to more of a dedicated, it's still going to be on WordPress, but a dedicated course membership system. Whereas that is kind of for a membership, but you kind of have to like custom build it around whatever you need.
Part of a larger system.
Yeah. The one that I'm looking at now, I haven't really started getting my hands dirty with this yet, but I'm looking at Lifter LMS. I think it's lifterlms.com. It's a pretty popular WordPress plugin for creating LMSs for learning management system. So it's like for courses, memberships, and I'm going to put the course on like a dedicated site at productizecourse.com. The other thing that I need to work on in the next week is I decided to really just double down on this whole productize brand thing. My personal site has been castjam.com. The word Cast Jam doesn't really mean anything other than, you know, it's like like Cass has been my nickname growing up, and Jam, I don't know. it actually dates back to that was actually my AOL Instant Messenger screen name from when I was 13 years old.
Yes.
And then when I was 16 or 17, I got that domain name, and it's still my personal blog when I'm 34 years old. So anyway,
hold on a sec. You're 34 years old?
Wait, am I?
Screw you, man. Whatever. So you're going to geek it. You're not going to go Teachable or like one of those hosted platforms.
No, but for my site, I do plan to change the domain from castjam.com to productizeandscale.com. You know, longer domain name, whatever, but I'm trying to just really focus on the Productize as the brand. I got a logo designed for that. That'll be coming out with the new domain. Not really redesigning the site, but just putting that branding on it. It's still me. Not much is really going to change in terms of the content on the site, but it's just like that's just become a big focus of everything that I do in terms of all of my products, my businesses, the stuff that I write about.
New blog posts that you write are going to go there?
I'm sure I'll continue to write blog posts occasionally for Audience Ops, occasionally for Ops Calendar, but the stuff that's like personally from me that's aimed at the Productize course and whatnot, that's on my personal site. That's something that I want to do in the next week or two. One of my big goals for 2018, and I'm like hesitant to talk about this because I don't know whether or not I'll follow through on it.
Okay. Now I want to hear.
Community. I think that communities, both paid and free communities, are where almost all marketing is headed now. Especially content marketing, but audience-driven marketing. And so I just want to do a much better job of that. I've always, I think, done a pretty poor job when it comes to keeping my members engaged with one another and with me. Like, I have an email list, and I do send newsletters to the list pretty often, but I want to do more to have my list members communing with each other and the paid members of Productize to get more. Like, we have a forum through Productize, and it's mildly active. It's not nearly as active as I would like it to be, and that's primarily because I don't get in there enough, and I don't post. I don't ask questions. I don't engage enough.
That's the thing. It feels like it takes a certain personality. I see it in the Facebook groups, right? The Shopify Facebook groups are very important to us. I see these people, like the leaders of these groups, they're amazing. I can't
exactly
do what they do. They overshare. They get people excited. They take, you know, sometimes I have an interesting thought and I write it down to like talk about here. But they take that and just immediately go and make content out of it and write.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
I struggle with that. I see the same exact thing. I see those type of personalities out there who run these really active Facebook groups and other groups. Like, maybe it's partly like my personality. Like, I'm just not instantly going out and interacting with people. It's also time. Like, I'm running businesses, so I've always struggled with like justifying, like, I can't just sit around here for hours in Slack rooms and on Facebook groups, like interacting and stuff like that. But I do see the power of it as a marketing channel, and I'm talking about both having a free Facebook group, private Facebook group, but free, as like you subscribe to my email list. The next step is like, okay, join us in the private Facebook group. And then there's also the paid community through Productize that involves both the forum and the private Slack group and the course material. What I'm getting at is that, like, especially when it comes to content, like if when I search for answers to stuff, when I'm trying to research a particular topic, I don't really go to Google anymore. I go to the private communities that I'm a part of. I go to the forums that I'm in a few paid forums. And I'm in a few Facebook groups, and I talk to friends who I know and I trust their opinion. And I ask, like, what's working? What have you done? What are the case studies that have worked? And then I try to learn from that rather than just seeing what shows up on like the first page of Google. Like SEO traffic of it, and content traffic to content will always be a factor when you're building traffic to your site. And and building up content and follow-up sequences for your audience. But if you can supplement that with a private community, that could be a place to share content, to have conversations about it, for members to talk to each other, for members to...
Yeah, it's very powerful, but it's hard to do.
It is. But I think that there's more of an ROI to be had if you actually do commit the time to it, rather than look at it as like a nice to have, or like it's this fun to do only if you happen to have a few spare minutes. But if you actually dedicate some time to it every week, it could be a significant traffic source. I mean, there are plenty of businesses who, like, their private Facebook group is like their number one lead source for their products, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This makes me think of an article I came across. It's like one of those articles you come across and you start sharing it like on Slack, and I put it into the stand-up channel and the marketing channel. I DM it to people. I'm like, guys, this is like it. So it's an article on Medium by Andy Raskin, who's like a strategic guy. I don't know if he's an investor or what, but it's called The Greatest Sales Pitch I've Seen All Year.
Oh, I saw that. I think you tweeted that.
It's probably that. Probably that. So
yeah.
So this was
from Drift.
Is, you know, it goes along with what you're saying in terms of how people buy. And the key paragraph from it, right? Quote, product differentiation by itself has become indefensible, because today's competitors can copy your better, faster, cheaper features virtually instantly. Now, the only thing they can't replicate is the trust that customers feel for you and your team. And it's like, shit, that feels true. You might have a lead in features and you did something sooner or faster, but to really thrive, not just like, you know, make it, it has to be a connection between the company, you know, and the customer, and the community piece, the communication, the transparency. It's all these things that we looked at as like, oh, content marketing, oh, blogging, they got to know you, they trust you. Now it's like synthesizing into like, that's marketing now.
That's so true. I'd like to go along with that. We're connecting all these dots that I think are, this is definitely like a change. Like Josh Pigford's article, which came out in December, titled Growth Hacking is Manipulation. I think this goes along with the same theme. You know, he's touching on like, look, like all these hacks when it comes to marketing, like the goal shouldn't be to kind of trick people to come through your mousetrap. It should be to just build trust and like legitimately, even if it works. I mean, it's not to say that there aren't things that can help you build traffic and bring more people into the top of the funnel, but once they get to the top of that funnel, then the work of actually building trust and making them feel like they're part of a group of like-minded people who are all together working towards the same goal, solving the same problem, you know, trying to reach the same milestones. Like, we have the tools available between Facebook groups and social media and forums and Slack and all this stuff. Like, you can leverage those connections to actually just build a tribe. Like, I hate all these stupid marketing terms that you hear, like, but tribes. But the idea is that, like, it actually makes your product more defensible too. Because I think part of what he was saying in that Drift presentation was you can't compete on product features anymore. It's impossible to compete on features. There's just way too much competition. Everybody's moving way too fast in terms of shipping or matching each other on features. The only thing that you truly can compete on is that relationship with your customer.
Yeah. And I love that it comes from Drift, because Drift should not exist. Drift is an Intercom clone. It is a chat. That's all it is. If you were looking at the world through the lens of, well, should we compete in this space with Intercom, you would say no. Especially those guys at Drift, those are very experienced people with big ambitions. The only way you would even enter that market is if you approached it from the point of view of, well, how do people really feel about Intercom? I have no warmth toward Intercom, right? 37 Signals, I haven't used their products in a decade. I still have strong affinity toward them. There's a bunch of other companies I could say the same thing about. So if you looked at it that way, all of a sudden you look at Intercom's market, you say, that's actually a giant opportunity, because they're not talking to their customers. They don't have the trust of their customers in the same way. They're going to move upstream and go toward the enterprise. And then that connection is going to be lost.
Yeah. And every company can potentially have their own community.
Right. No one's stopping you. Right. No competitors in your way.
Right. Like, but I mean, like, you don't feel the affinity toward Intercom, but some people do. Like, they have some people who are super loyal to it. And some people are super loyal to the 10 other live chat apps out on the market, right? Or potentially so. Like, if you look at email marketing automation tools, that's one of the most competitive spaces that you could possibly be
in. And that really is tribal. People like defend their decision on who they went with.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, when Nathan Barry did Convert, was starting up ConvertKit, it was like, you're entering a super competitive space. And then he started to focus in on bloggers and build a whole tribe and build a conference around it and all that stuff. And then even like Drip, you know, what Rob has done with Drip, I mean, a big reason why I continue to be a Drip customer today is because I've been part of Rob's community, you know, between the podcast and the conferences and everything. And it's like, I'm not saying like that is what, like if Drip didn't actually have the feature set that I needed, I wouldn't be a customer of it. But today I could use ActiveCampaign, I could use ConvertKit, I could use any of these. They all do the same thing.
The features are part of it. It's almost like, when people say you make the decision to buy emotionally and then you intellectually, what's it called? Justify it. Right. It's like you really want to find any excuse possible to use this product. And then as long as the features justify you're doing it and compromises you need to make to use this particular product, if that connection piece is strong enough, then they'll get you.
I just think that, like, coming back to, like, in terms of like getting tactical with this stuff, like building a private Facebook group, I happen to think is probably the best avenue for this. Maybe it won't always be, but like you look at what like Brennan has been doing with Right Message. He's completely building the early traction of this thing through his private Right Message Facebook group. The guys at Lifter LMS, that WordPress plugin that's really popular, they have an extremely active private Facebook group. It's just hundreds and thousands of members just interacting, requesting features, talking about their pain points, talking about their problems, asking questions, like inspiring each other, like sharing their big wins, you know, giving each other high fives. And it's all swirling around this product. And if you're a founder and you have access to, and you're running a Facebook group that has all these engaged people sharing with you their needs and their desires and their big wins and all this stuff, like that's the ultimate market research. That you can go to those people and ask them what they want you to build next. You can validate those features. You can go on gut feel. You can share your next blog post. You can do everything. And it, like when you have that kind of access, like rather than feeling like you have to like claw up this big mountain of just getting 100 people to visit your website, I just think the community is going to, it already is, but it needs to play more of a role in everyone's marketing, I think, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I think we're going to talk about that a lot in 2018. That's what I think. We're going to look to that as a lever, something that changes the math, not just I spent $1,000 in ads and got X number of leads and X number of customers. And so what if I improve the conversion rate? Not that, something that completely changes the math. Of this is getting traction in this space, and that can grow at a very different pace than regular campaign. All right, homie, I got a boogie soon.
I think we had a good one here.
Yeah, I like the ones where we have no agenda.
Yeah, I think they do get more interesting, it seems.
Yep. Cool. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. Let's put a link to that article, that marketing article. I think that's worth reading. We touched on one element of it in product differentiation, but the best part of it is it really helps to shape a marketing narrative that goes along with that mindset of community, of being on the same side as positioning yourself against like the big enemy, the inevitable thing. It's very, very good.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Bri, you have a great weekend over there.
You too. Everyone stay warm out there, and yeah, get back at it. 2018, here we go.
All right, man. Be good. Yeah.